Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Jonathan Trichter, an investment banker and expert in public pensions and public finance, and the Republican candidate in the race to become New York State Comptroller. He's active in New York government policy and civic causes for decades. Jonathan Trichter spent his early career in New York City government and on political campaigns. He worked for the New York Public Interest Group, both in high school and through college. Trichter has worked for J.P. Morgan, as well as policy director on Harry Wilson's campaign for New York State Comptroller in 2010. Welcome, Jonathan Trichter.
Alan, thank you for having me.
Well, it's great. So, do you live in New York City?
I do. I live in the Upper East Side with my beautiful wife and beautiful son.
Wow. That's terrific. What is it that motivates you? What makes you angry? What makes you happy?
Yeah, so why don't we talk about what makes me frustrated or a bit angry when it comes to the New York State Comptroller's office and why I'm running, since it connects to the reason I'm fortunate enough to be sitting here next to you. The answer is I was a public finance investment banker at J.P. Morgan, and I covered the comptroller's office. At the time, Alan Hevesy was in office, and it wasn't too long after that that he was hauled off to prison. And in the vacancy, Shelley Silver handpicked the current incumbent, Tom DiNapoli, over the objection of every editorial board in the state, because as the governor of his own party said at the time, he was totally and thoroughly unqualified. And then I sat back and I watched as I covered the office, and Tom DiNapoli did so very little with it. And the amount that he did do with it was really to protect the status quo and his friends in Albany, who he owed, of course, his incumbency to. At the same time, the state comptroller's office is hugely powerful with a tremendous amount of potential to do so much good for ordinary New Yorkers and to fix much of what is fiscally broken in Albany. And yet the comptroller's left that all on the table. He has not exercised the powers of the office to their full potential, and he's not brought meaningful reform to the state. He's really a go-along, get-along protector of the culture of Albany, the broken culture of Albany. And so that frustrated me, and that's one of the reasons why I'm running in 2018. I think he's uniquely vulnerable, and I think he should be taken out. I think the office was set up not for an insider politician to protect his friends and cronies, but for an outsider with independence who shouldn't be political, who isn't political, who will use the power of the office to scrutinize and bring grown-up supervision to a bunch of Albany children who have really run amok for too long.
So do you think that he's been too soft on Governor Cuomo?
So on Governor Cuomo, he's been somewhat effective in releasing some research papers and audits that have dinged the governor in places where others have not. Mm. But none of his audits, right, none of the press releases, none of the findings that he's come up with have actually been effectuated into meaningful change. And I'll give you a perfect example. He's released a few good reports, but they haven't amounted to much. At the same time, as you may be aware, but you may not, because the comptroller likes to keep a low profile when it comes to his real powers, the comptroller has to certify the budget each and every year. And it's not clear at all that if he does not certify the budget, that it's necessarily licit. And so my point is that the comptroller has signed off on all the budget gimmicks, one-shots, economic development boondoggles that have created very few jobs, but been very effective at putting high-level officials in prison. And also, artificially, through fiscal gimmicks, busted the budget cap. And instead of the 2% budget cap that we have, as the Citizen Budget Commission points out, the state budget this year is probably 4 or 5% over from last year. And all of that, the comptroller signed off on. The reason is because he is the protector of the status quo, and he's just tentative to upset the apple cart. He is everybody's best friend in Albany. By contrast, I have no friends in Albany, Alan. I just got off of Susan Arbiter's show, and I told her she was my only friend in Albany. Now that I met you, I have two, so I guess I'm not speaking literally. But
don't
the point...
be so sure.
Well, we still have a few minutes to hopefully I'll ingratiate myself before I get out of here. Again, the point being is that I would refuse to sign off on a budget that wasn't structurally sound, that wasn't fiscally balanced, that wasn't free of gimmicks and economic boondoggles, that don't do anything to create jobs, and that wasn't right and fair for ordinary New Yorkers. I would take my pen and go home. I would look right in the governor's face, and I would say, Cynthia?
That's funny.
Took you a minute, though, right? You had a pause there. Now, of course, I hope I'm not a Governor Cuomo fan, and so I would do even more to be tougher on the governor if I'm elected. But I hope and I believe that Marcus Molinaro has a chance, and I'd like to work collaboratively with him because he's talked about real structural reform when it comes to the budget, zero-based budgeting and things like that, all things that I support. But irrespective of who the governor is, I will be an independent controller, and I will work on behalf of the people, not Albany special interests.
Now, one of the things that the governor did, along with the legislature, and I still can't figure it out, is they took away the pre-audit function from the controller, and the governor wants to give it to his own, well, for want of a better word, hack. So my question to you would be, what kind of critique of that whole move do you have?
Big one. I critique it along with the controller. I think that the controller should have that pre-audit authority when it comes to contracts that are artificially outside of the budget process only because the governor carved them out of the budget process. Again, the controller has railed against this, as have good government groups, but nothing much has come of it. More to the point, though, I would argue that the controller has made short use, very little effective use of the pre-audit authority where he still has it and has had it traditionally, which made it easier for the governor to take it away from him. Let me give you a perfect example. It's a little outside the box, but it's totally licit and entirely true, and it's all on record. In 2011 or so, Vito Lopez sexually harassed two female staff members, and then the controller's office helped negotiate a secret settlement with that set of victims and even included a confidentiality agreement and a gag order on the victims such that they couldn't speak. In addition, the controller's office cut the check for those victims to keep them silent and pre-audited it. And according to the controller's office, their pre-audit function was just to make sure that the lawyers had signed off on it and it was legal and there was a document and everything was in an order. If he had actually used his pre-audit authority for any real decency and with an eye towards his obligation to the public interest and the public trust, he would have stepped in and said, you know what, Vito Lopez is an elected official. There's no reason why there should be a confidentiality agreement here. The public interest is to stop Vito Lopez from sexually harassing anybody in the future and to punish him for what he's done in the past. Instead, he rubber-stamped that audit, that pre-audit. He allowed the payment to be made. And, of course, that allowed Vito Lopez to continue hiring female staffers and, surprise, surprise, harass them. So this whole thing blew up in 2012. There was a J. Cope investigation in 2013, and it all became public. And the controller still maintains that that pre-audit authority when it comes to issues of sexual harassment, as an example, is just to make sure that both lawyers have signed off on the document and the settlement. So since then, he has actually pre-audited and paid 18 additional secret settlements for accusers of sexual harassment in state government. There is a perfect example of a power of the controller's office that is supposed to be used for the public interest, the public good, that this controller refuses to use for the public interest and the public good. So and I wouldn't do that.
So why do you think, Jonathan Trichter, this governor has been so mean to this controller?
Yeah, I think the governor, much like the governor, two governors before Cuomo, thought that Tom DiNapoli was unqualified for the job. The job shouldn't be political, requires a specific set of skills that is acquired in the private sector. Of course, DiNapoli's been a government official and elected official since he's 18 years old. He's a 20-year backbencher in the assembly. He was selected to assume the position despite having no qualifications. And I don't think the governor respects his chops. Remember when the controller first took office, he was faced with a surprise reporter at a local diner of his in Great Neck who asked him what the asset allocations of the $200 million, at the time it was $154 billion pension fund was, and the controller had no idea how much was in stocks and how much was in bonds, fixed versus equities. I don't think that that kind of expertise or lack of it inspires respect among anyone who takes himself seriously and thinks that a $200 billion pension fund should have somebody behind it investing it who knows what they're doing.
So let me ask you about that pension fund, Jonathan Trichter. The controller seems, he's not braggadocio, but he does seem to think it's done pretty well. Do you not?
So let me contest the point that he's not braggadocio. If you Google the following sentence, quote, "The fund has consistently been ranked among the best-funded, most well-managed pension funds in the country," end quote. You'll find it show up in any search engine over 200 times. So that is my counterpoint to the argument that the controller hasn't been trumpeting his own quote-unquote success.
Well, what's wrong with that if he's right?
He's not. So there are three measures of pension fund performance, right? The first is expectations, and the comptroller has expected to earn 7.6% over the past 10 years since he's been in office. He has actually, although obfuscated it, but he has actually only earned 5.6%. And he does report that in places, but that's gross of fees. If you take net of fees, it's even less, which he doesn't report at all. So he's underperformed his own expectations, 5.6% versus 7.6%,
well,
which amounts to...
What's wrong with aiming high?
The problem with aiming high is if you fall $81 billion short, which is what the comptroller has done. So he's missed his bogey by $81 billion, and that has been translated into taxes that all New Yorkers have to pay to make up for. So that's issue one in terms of how he's actually performed on the pension system. And of course, the level of financial literacy among the political press is unfortunately lower than necessary to ferret that out. The second benchmark measure when you look at a public pension fund is how it's done among its competitors. And it turns out that it's very hard to measure the New York State's pension fund's performance against other pension funds because we have this strange fiscal year, right? We're on a March 31st fiscal year. And so for 10 years, the comptroller has used that to mask his own benchmark performance against other large public pension funds. So being a public finance banker and a pension expert, I actually was able to go back and quarter by quarter compile data from the largest public pension funds in the country and tie them all out to a synthetic March 31st fiscal year. And lo and behold, the New York State Pension Fund has performed worse than the median large pension funds in America. So it's not the best managed by any measure. And of course, the last measure is just the market itself. And every asset class that the New York State Pension Fund has money in, the CRF, the State Common Retirement Fund under DiNapoli's control, has performed worse than that asset class benchmark. So in no way has this pension fund been well managed.
So let me go from there to ask you about what some people say, which is that a comptroller should not be the single person who decides.
Well, we agree on that, Alan. This comptroller should not be the single person who decides.
No, we're not. That's not what I said, and you know it. I'm asking you, you get elected. What would you do? Would you say, okay, you know, I'm going to fight so that by law, not by practice, but by law, that responsibility goes to four or five people as opposed to one person.
Yeah, so I do agree that I would get elected, not appointed. That does distinguish me somewhat.
Come on. Cheap shot. Go ahead.
I also hit you with a cheap shot prior to, right, which was that that this comptroller shouldn't be the single person in charge of the pension system's investment assets. So what I would do is, over the course of my first term as comptroller, I would fix everything that's wrong with the pension system and then lock it in via legislation. I would use all my political capital to lock in all the changes with the management and investment approach of the pension system over the first 2 years of the office. And the last 2 years of the office, after all of my reforms have been locked in such that the public fisc was protected and well-positioned to earn the maximum benefits and investment earnings over the in the future, I would then be happy to entertain and organize a board that would oversee the pension fund's investments after that. The problem, though, of course, is that pension boards across America have not been the be-all solution to pension problems, right? We know that in America, public pension funds are facing a crisis. In fact, there are $6 to $8 trillion in unfunded benefits in American public pension funds today. That's a huge number.
Not in New York, right?
In New York City.
Okay, right. Well, yeah.
The reason that New York State, though, doesn't have a huge unfunded liability, although it does have a significant unfunded liability, right? I mean, even under DiNapoli, he claims that there's $11.5 billion in off-balance sheet pension debt. It's hard to find, and he never talks about it, but the 94.5% funded ratio that he trumpets means there's $11.5 billion in pension debt. That's a significant number. On top of that, that 94.5% funded ratio is contingent upon the comptroller earning his expected rate of return, which we know he's missed over the past 10 years. So realistically, there's more like between $35 and $55 billion in off-balance sheet pension debt that the state doesn't even recognize and that the comptroller covers up. So the state does have a significant amount of pension debt. If you look at a $50 billion pension debt off-balance sheet, and by the way, when I say off-balance sheet, the private sector analog there would be the special purpose vehicle that Enron used to park debt so that its accountants couldn't find it. And that's a practice that didn't end well.
And are you're accusing DiNapoli of doing the same thing?
It's not an accusation. It's a data point. I mean, you could look at deep into the actuarial
reports. What's the difference
between
an accusation and data point?
Well, one is me making a claim, and the other one is me pointing out to, you know, here's another, here's a poor analogy, the dead body on the street, that right next to the guy with the knife standing over him with the blood on it. I mean, that's what I'm trying to say. This isn't kind of a hypothetical accusation. The comptroller himself does report in his own disclosures that there's between $11.5 and $35 billion in off-balance sheet pension debt. And I'm saying it's more like $50 billion based on assumptions. So it's just, it's a little bit stronger than an accusation is my point. And the reason, though, that even given all of that, we don't have, let's say, a 50% funded ratio, you know, which is closer to New York City's, closer to New Jersey's, is because the comptroller has been particularly aggressive at making up for his investment shortfalls via employer contributions, which translates into taxes. So that $81 billion undershooting of his return expectations has been made up for in taxes over the course of his tenure over the past 10 years in New York State.
Jonathan Trichter, you have said that DiNapoli paid $6 billion to hedge fund managers, private equity, and other alternative fund managers at the same time they underperformed in the market. Could you explain that to us?
Yeah. So look, the, if any of you guys have money in your hedge funds or private equity funds, and many people, listeners, probably don't, the reason you don't and the reason Warren Buffett and other experts warn against it is because of their onerous fee structure, which is the traditional 2 and 20. They charge 2% of all money under management and 20% of all profits. This comptroller has a tremendous amount of money in, of the pension fund, of the state pension fund's money, invested in hedge funds, private equity, and other very risky alternative funds that charge that 2 and 20 fee structure. The result is that he has paid $6 billion to hedge fund managers and the like since he's been in office. And if that sounds like a lot, it's only because it is. Especially when you consider that the hedge funds and the entire alternative investment portfolio under DiNapoli has way underperformed the market. If he had just invested in a passive, plain vanilla index, the kind of investment that most listeners who have traditional 401k plans are probably invested in, he wouldn't have paid anything near that in fees, and he would have earned much more in returns, right? The S&P 500 over the last 10 years earned almost 7.5%. DiNapoli's alternative fund portfolio earned 5.4% and charged an arm and a leg in the bargain.
So are you accusing him of politically choosing hedge fund managers who he has connections to?
He picks and chooses winners. Whether it's based on politics or not, I can't say. But choosing and selecting alternative fund managers is a picking winners or losers game that this comptroller can't win for two reasons. One is it's a $200 billion pension fund. When you have $200 billion, Alan, you kind of are the market. You really can't find winners and losers. You might as well just let it ride on the S&P, put your faith in the American economy. And if he had done that, he'd been much better off. In addition, I would accuse this comptroller of not being a very good a picker of winners and losers when it comes to investment managers. He has no expertise. There's no reason why he should be, and he hasn't been.
So let me ask you, who would you rely on other than yourself? Because obviously $200 billion is a lot of money. How would you do that? Would you pick Republicans with bona fides? What would you do?
You, Alan, me and you were going to do it together.
No.
My investment strategy would, again, be to put the equity portfolio mostly in indexes that mirror the overall market. Yeah. So you really don't have to pick winners and losers. I'm just mirroring the performance of the S&P 500 at a very low cost. It's the same thing that most of your listeners will be doing with their 401ks.
Jonathan Trichter, would you ever use the money that, you know, public people have put into their pensions and everything else, would you use it to punish something that you don't like?
Alan, I'm going to use it to punish you.
Yeah, well, that's fine.
No, of course not. I'm not going to punish my enemies, my friends, or other industries with the public's money. It's not my money.
If South Africa, for example, came along when that became a big issue and a lot of people were leaning on our controllers not to put money into anything South African, do you think that that's a place that people ought to be concerned about?
Yeah. So the McGride principles and apartheid was a separate issue. I would never have put money into a company that had violated the McBride principles, nor would I have put it into a company that was doing business in Sudan, nor would I put it into a company that was in Iran. But here's the real truth about that, is that in the modern economy, in the S&P 500, there are no companies that are in Sudan. There are no companies that are in Iran. There's just no danger of it. So I'm happy to sit here and play politics and say I would never invest in Iran or a company that's of Iranian origin, but they're not in the S&P 500, so it's not really a risk.
So how about your, you know, your political friends, the guys who are sitting on either side of you now, you know, people who are political staff and say, okay, listen, you're a Republican, you gotta help your friends who are Republicans here. Would you do that?
I don't have any friends in politics, Alan.
You said
I'm really
that before.
And I wasn't
except
lying when I said it the first time. So yeah. You'll be the one guy I helped. You'll be the one guy I punished. Really, you've got the most to win or lose in this.
But
campaign.
Do you have political philosophy? For example, public radio gets money from the state. There are many people who think it shouldn't.
I do. I have a political philosophy. I'm a politically aware person. I'm publicly concerned, and I've got my own beliefs. And I vote, you know, in every given election. I've got preferences for candidates. However, the comptroller's office is not a political office. So just like I have my own political beliefs, it doesn't necessarily come into play when I get to work every day.
Well, except that, as I've often said to my students, politics is the authoritative allocation of scarce resources, and you would be playing in that game.
I don't really have scarce resources as a comptroller. I've got 2,600 people in the office. I got a budget of $346 million a year and a $200 billion pension fund. It's the market power of the Saudi prince. It's the one office in the country, or at least in New York State, besides the governor's office, where resources aren't scarce and there's so much good that could be done. And no, I would deploy it based on the merits, based upon the constitutional authority given to me and the trust that the voters put in place. And I don't think there's much politics to come into play when it comes to the comptroller's functionality of manifesting that power.
So, Jonathan Trichter, how's Donald Trump doing?
So I'm running for comptroller of New York State.
It's not a
political office. It's not an ideological office. And you can ask me what I think about Trump, but what I say about him bears no impact on the job. It's same. What I say about Donald Trump has little impact on the comptroller's.
We only got 3 minutes. What do you say about him?
I can run out the clock on the last 3 minutes. I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm not talking about politics. I'm not talking about federal
races.
Sounds
like you don't want to talk
stuff
about him because you don't want to say anything good about him.
Well, you can read between the lines any way you want, but I'm still saying I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm running for state comptroller.
So do you think that there's a relationship between the federal government and the budget of New York State and what they do? So, for example, you know, we're not allowed to deduct our taxes, which we used to be able to do. That has to have some repercussions, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But for the most part, it helps voters on the whole, right? The majority of New York State voters will see a tax rebate due to the tax overhaul in Congress. Having said that, the ones it will hurt, of course, because New York State has been not very efficient at allocating its own resources and has relied on that deduction to pass along the taxes it collects to the federal government. The federal government said no more. Now, here's where you're going to get one political statement out of me. At the same time that that's true, and New York State should fix its own house, it is also the case that Congress and the president and the Senate have been really terrible at getting their own act together and finding efficiencies in their own budget and in the social entitlement programs and cutting the budget and being efficient with their own allocation of resources. And if they had done that, right, if they had overhauled entitlement programs and the budget that they passed was fiscally responsible, I'd have much more sympathy for them cracking down on us states which have not followed suit. But I do think the federal government should get its own act in gear before it starts funding its own tax overhaul, which is largely a good and productive step on our nickel.
It's a wonderful treat to have you here with us today. Jonathan Trichter is candidate for the New York State Comptroller's job. We are delighted that you have chosen to be with us, and I hope that you'll come back and talk to us again.
I hope so, too. Alan, you're my best friend in Albany, my biggest enemy, and my most favored patron.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.